Yes.
I'm sorry, Ian.
Ready.
You're so antsy today. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast.
I had more caffeine this morning than I usually do. That's why.
For Tuesday, April 12th, 2022, is Cadbury Cream Egg season. That's Ian Ferguson. I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be talking about an Amico price hike. Fun times. Morbius again. Sora's big feet are gone. And other fun stuff. We went over some of our weekend on the exclusive podcast.
We did.
At patreon.com/CUpodcast. I got hacked.
Pat got hacked. We also had a little
food poisoning, retrospective.
A little chat about food poisoning. Neither of us had food poisoning this past weekend, though, so that's good. We're fine. We know you're upset.
I got a haircut. You didn't comment on my haircut.
I don't comment on haircuts. I just don't notice them.
Well,
yours. It is a little tighter. A little tighter.
It has to be, because the hair was...
It's tough for me to notice haircuts on people with curly hair.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah, because there's a lot of volume.
Got my mom's hair, thankfully.
It's nice, though. It's nice. It's nice curly hair. It's good.
Thank you, Ian.
It's good. It really... I bet you it impresses the ladies. I did see Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Speaking of impressing the ladies.
Part 2, impressing the ladies. I did. I had to take Vani out for that, of course.
The first one was a Valentine's Day date, I remember you told me, a couple years ago.
It was right before all hell broke loose. Yeah. It was the last movie I saw in theaters, and I thought for a long time there that it was going to be the Sonic 2 might be the first movie I saw in theaters back, but I got dragged out for Halloween and I think one other movie last year. I can't remember what. Sonic 2 was a lot of fun. If you wanted it to be more video gamey than the first one, you got it. There's more video game references, more video game type stuff. The way they bring in Knuckles and Tails makes sense. The movie knows that it's just a video game movie and doesn't really dwell too long on it. Gets right into things. I'm always impressed by the...
Why would it dwell on it? What do you mean?
Like, it doesn't... It didn't spend a lot of time, like, building up how to get back into the story. It was like, hey, we're back, and we're right into the story. Like,
oh, okay. They didn't have to recap or reintroduce.
No, yeah, it was very...
They know who's seen this movie.
It was quick. It quickly got back into it. So, yeah, it was fun. It's a video game movie. Jim Carrey was good. It's going to be enjoyed by kids. It's enjoyable by adults. It's not like high art, but it's way better than video game movies have been.
Let me see the Rotten Tomatoes on
that. Rotten Tomatoes, I think, is 67, and I think the
audience score is always
viewer high. Viewer score is 97, 98.
67, all right. That's not bad.
No.
That's fresh. 60 is the threshold for fresh.
What was most interesting to me is the amount of time they actually spent on the human characters in this, which...
Was it less than the first?
No, it's more. A little bit more. There's a long segment that's pretty funny that involves a wedding.
The first one was 1 hour 40. This is over 2 hours. 2 hours and 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I know.
Impressive. Well, you got a lot more characters, I guess.
Yeah, they added 2 brand new characters that everyone wanted to make sure had screen time. Like, that was something I was worried about going in, that Knuckles was going to have like 5 minutes of screen time or Tails was only going to be in there briefly. No. They were there.
You were worried about. Yeah, that was a concern.
They were there for the whole movie. Yes, Pat. People like movies and they watch them. And they have concerns and hopes. What was I going to say? Oh, I think the humans actually help it. I think if they had to run on a video game premise or a video game story the entire time, I think they would burn out of ideas or things to do with the critters. That said, it was fun. Go see it. I still don't think the Mario movie is going to be very good.
Well, based upon the voice actors, they're just...
The direction that they're going in. It's one of those things where obviously Nintendo wants to make money off these characters and they see a movie as a good way to do it. But I think what Sonic does right is that they make sure that they get the character accurate. And because of that, you can kind of put them into anything.
Mario doesn't have a character. That's the problem.
Yes, exactly.
He isn't a character since the cartoons 30 years ago.
Well, and that's the problem with a lot of video game movies is that there is no character. There's a world. There might be a story. But when you throw the character in there, especially in something like, for instance, Silent Hill, which the first Silent Hill movie was okay. Because these characters are played by you, they have the least amount of dialogue. So they've got to build this character. Sure. And so often it goes wrong. Sonic, unlike Mario, Sonic has a character. They've been working on a Sonic character for...
They've had tons of cartoons.
Cartoons. So people already know what to expect from it. So as long as they get that right, they've already seen this character in so many different iterations that they can accept one more retelling of the story as long as they know the main character. And that's what Sonic does properly.
Mario is like Mickey Mouse with less personality. Like, there's like no personality to Mario.
Right.
He says a couple of words, yahoo! They took away any notion of him being Italian at this point. They said he's...
Other than the accent.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's a go!
It's a me!
Which was like, almost insulting how it's become like that. But then, like, he's 26 years old randomly, instead of like a grown-ass man, which everyone always thought was how it always was portrayed. And then, like, that's the character. Like, there's no character. There's no character to Mario. Isn't.
If you ask me how old Mario was, I would say 40. Mario is like
45.
40. He is a 40-year-old man.
A rough 40. A rough 40, I would say. Did you see the winner of the speaking? Not going on. The guys from Jersey. The winner of the Masters, Scotty Scheffler.
I
thought he was 40 years old. The 25-year-old kid, and he looks like he was 40. I was like, wow. It's interesting how some people just look their features like with the chin and everything. Looks a lot older. Doesn't have our baby face features.
Speaking of movies, it looks like Morbius has the worst second weekend drop for a superhero movie. That's impressive. I don't think anyone expected it.
I thought that this made too much money the first week. There's no way this is going to keep up from the quality of this garbage.
Everyone who wanted to see it, they went out and saw it.
There's still goth kids. All the goth kids and emo kids went the first week.
I don't think they cared.
Well, you know, who's in high school. High school is always the kids that are into this.
Okay.
I was going to say, they hang out at the mall store anymore. That
Hot Topic.
Is there a Hot Topic anymore?
There are Hot Topics.
There's still kids that go there that probably saw this. He's in a band that people like. What was it? Something to Mars?
30 Whatever. Seconds to your mom.
don't you sell to my mom.
Morbius brought in $2.95 million at the start of its second weekend at the domestic box office, marking a record 83% drop from the previous Friday. So for the second weekend overall, Morbius is headed towards a $9.9 million gross.
Awful. So this will probably... Here's the thing. The budget wasn't that big on this movie, but I don't think it's still going to make enough money for
it. I think it was $75 million.
So then you add marketing. So remember,
$39 million was the opening weekend. You add another 10. So let's say this does $60 million. You're still not making any money back.
Remember out there, folks, that the
marketing and all that. Too.
The rule of thumb is that the studios get only about half of ticket sales.
Right.
Well, about half overall. So it's like you have to do double the budget to break even, plus the marketing budget, which could be anywhere from 50% to sometimes 100% of the movie budget for this. How many fucking commercials do you see for Morbius? I saw constant Morbius commercials.
I literally don't ever watch TV.
So like they marketed this. So the good news is that this will probably not warrant a sequel.
No.
The bad is that they already brought in the Vulture from the MCU and ruined that, and they're going forward with the Madam Web and Kraven movies that no one will see those movies. Like, Morbius is something that people go, okay, it's Morbius. It's a vampire. How are they going to sell you Kraven the Hunter? He hunts big game. He's not a protagonist. He's hunting rhinos, and he fucking has a goddamn like leopard vest with the head on it. Like, I don't want to watch that guy. He's an interesting villain, but that's not a protagonist. A poacher, for God's sake. What, Sony? What are you? Okay, I'm sorry.
Sonic made $71 million in its opening weekend.
Because that's a likable character. I may not be into it, but it's a likable character.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking Craven's not a likable character.
Jesus, Michael Bay's Ambulance debuted at $8.7 million in fourth place on its opening weekend.
I kind of feel bad because I actually had an interesting premise to it. And it's like, it's a non-genre movie at least. And it has Jake Gyllenhaal looks like like he looks out of his mind in the movie, and Jake's always good for these sort of roles. That looked interesting. The whole thing takes place in the ambulance, basically.
Right.
Oh, is that low? 8 million for the first day? I guess it is.
For its opening weekend, it was fourth place.
Oh, that's for the whole weekend?
That's for its weekend.
Poor Michael, not poor Michael Bay, but that's bad.
I'm not worried about Michael Bay.
That's a bad opening weekend. Because yes. That was a lot of commercials for that, too. I think, you know what hurt that? The name sucks. Ambulance is not a good name for like an action. It just isn't. A lot of times the name is like Ambulance. What is that about?
Makes me think of Phone Booth, and I hated that fucking movie.
Is that the one with
Colin Farrell?
He's got to be on the phone booth the whole movie.
Fucking hate.
Is it a real time movie or no?
Yeah, it's 87 minutes.
It's a real time movie.
Yeah, it's short.
Like Nick of Time with Johnny Depp.
Feels like too long.
Not many real time movies. Those are interesting. Like once every like 4 or 5 years, I do like a real time.
I like
movie.
The idea. I never watched 24, but I always thought the idea of 24 was interesting. The fact that it takes place over 24 real time hours.
I don't think that show was on for like 9 years, 8 years. I never watched one full episode.
The initial season was interesting, but after that, I was like,
how are you going to do this for 8 years?
Yeah, how are you going to do eight of these?
Like one day event. Right. Then what happens if like you got to like travel somewhere? Like what? Are you not there those two hours of the season? What happened to Kiefer Sutherland? Oh, I saw him in a trailer for something recently, I believe. Anyway,
you're eating worms, Michael.
A World of Tanks. Announced, this is War Gaming. They do World of Tanks is a huge game that I'm not overly familiar with.
No, it's a big free to play game.
Yes, and obviously there's their assets got stolen for an unfortunate game last year
for Tank Battle
whatever. So this is fairly big news. They announced that they're going to leave Russia and Belarus where their operations were, and they were out of there as of the end of March. So they were gone. They're like, we're not putting up with this. We don't want to be around this. They transferred its live games business in Russia and Belarus to local management of Leicester Studio that is no longer affiliated with Wargaming. The company will not profit from this process either today or going forward. Much to the contrary, we expect to suffer substantial losses as a direct result of this decision. This was their press release. So take them at their word. They're done. They're done playing around with two nations that are invading Ukraine. So there you go. They're putting their money where their mouth is. And they're going to start closing their other studio, they said, in Belarus. There you go.
All right.
That's the way to – you got to put pressure on them.
Yeah. Capcom Arcade Stadium 2 was announced. Not a whole lot to say about this right now. It's going to be yet another collection of their classic arcade games. There was one released two years ago, and it started with basically you downloaded it. It gave you a free copy of 1943, I believe.
It got you a little taste, and then you had to buy the other ones?
And then you bought the other ones in packs. There was a lot of good games on there, but a lot of games I had already played, so I didn't really dive into it. But there were some notable standouts like Pro Gear, which is a horizontal shooter that was arcade only.
You had ones like, just real quick on the first one, you had stuff like Legendary Wings, Trojan, Bionic Commando, Forgotten Worlds, Ghouls and Ghosts, a lot of those early Genesis ones, Strider, Merc, Street Fighter, the original Street Fighter 2 and Turbo Hyper, and then like the 19X other X games.
And then 44. It had all the beat-em-ups that were in the beat-em-up bundle as well.
Captain Commando, Final Fights there.
Most of them. Armored Warriors, I think, was in there.
Yeah, that one's there. A few of them.
Yeah.
So
the new one is announced. They haven't given a list of games yet, but I believe the free game is going to be Sun, which is a horizontally scrolling monkey shooter. And then they announced a puzzle game that I have not ever seen before. I don't think I've even heard of it. That looks kind of cute. That will be a bonus if you pre-order the fighting game pack that they've got coming out.
It's a little bunny.
It's called Three Wonders. It's adorable.
It's a little bunny. It's like almost like a Kiko Cubicle little boxy
thing. Yeah, or a Pengo type of deal.
Yeah, it was adorable. Here's the deal, though. You look at the first pack of games, there's a lot of Capcom classics in there. You got Commando, 42, 43, Ghost. The well's going to run dry, potentially.
I think this is... Sun's not a shooter.
It's not a
Monkey King is a shooter.
It's not
that's Monkey King. Sun does involve a monkey, though.
Okay, just make sure.
I think Capcom's got a deep enough library that they've probably got interesting and worthwhile stuff to play. The main reason I didn't buy into the first collection much is because it's all shit we've seen before.
But like I said, like these are like top of my head. they're not going to give away like the really great games that they can sell separately. They're not going to give away like the fighting games because those are their own packs.
Oh, sure.
So like outside of this first one, I mean, Section Z's on this first one. Like these are the ones that would have made like video game years sort of stuff. A lot of these games.
Sure.
You know, so outside of that, it's like, okay, what do you got? Some more beat 'em ups that already been re-released. Maybe we'll see, but it's kind of telling. There's no list yet of games for it. That's sure. All. None at all. They announced Kingdom Hearts 4. I guess the remake did well enough.
Remake, the third one.
Third one.
I mean, they just keep remaking and re-releasing.
I thought they did a remake.
Only like 2 years old, 3 years old.
Did they do a remake?
They did. They've done like 50 billion remakes. But okay, the most 50 recent billion? Like big thing was part three.
Well, plus, you know, it had the, you know, it got into the video game Hall of Fame. You know, Smash Brothers Ultimate. Sure. So people are complaining that Sora's big feet are gone.
I don't know why you wanted to cover this, but apparently the design has changed. Sora used to have extraordinarily large kicks, like clown shoes, and those are gone. He is now wearing what could only be described as human-sized sneakers.
Human-sized sneakers? So people with that foot fetish are disappointed. It was a funny little thing. There's a picture here showing the feet, bare feet on a couch. That's an official Square Enix shot?
I don't think so. Is it really?
It says screenshot Square Enix / Kotaku.
Wow, unfortunate.
This might be a thing I don't want to go down that rabbit hole of Sora's feet. This could be an actual thing out there that you don't want to get into, but you do want to visit. You do want to visit ultimatenintendo.com. You absolutely do. There's nothing feet related, but you have great items like what's your face?
Just a funny thing. Giving Sora normal size shoes and feet is the most fucked up thing you could do after 20 years of this, explained Chris Person, former Kotaku video producer and host creator of Highlight Reel. They better fucking explain where his big shoes went. Like, they better go to Shoe World and all the shoes are emo and kind of sad.
See, it was interesting enough. You derailed my plug. Yes, that's right.
Well, you asked about my face, so I explained it.
Well, you know, we're going into the plug portion. The plug portion? That could be something else.
The plug portion.
You got the certain NES guidebooks.
No plugs there yet.
Hey, there's only 4 Yoshi prints left of the combat limited print to 22.
Get them.
We're down to 4. We just sold a t-shirt. We just sold a My Man t-shirt. My Man and stickers, enamel pins. It's a blast at ultimatenintendo.com. I'll be on Twitch Wednesday night. Ian will not be there. twitch.tv/countrycode for the best in 70s, 80s, and 90s commercials. And I'm on Cameo. cameo.com/PatConstry, and I'm going to be at Midwest Gaming Classic April 30th and May 1st at the end of the month in beautiful Milwaukee, Wisconsin. My first time in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
You'll have fun. It's a good convention. I've been there before.
You love SNK, don't you, Ian?
Yeah, I do, but I don't love this latest fucking development. 96% of the company is now owned by Electronic Gaming Development Company, which is a fancy way of saying Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia.
The crown prince.
Yeah. Guy who has people murdered.
The guy that was buddy-buddy with Jared Kushner. And is now investing in Kushner's fucking, it's like a payback thing happened with some investment firm that just came out. In return for, we'll just hack some American resident to death in a fucking consulate.
Yeah, just
like
a little thing that has to go on every once in a while.
Yeah, that's fine.
So, yeah, this is upsetting. I have not, and this started about a year ago. This article from Kotaku does mention that. That it was in 2020, I believe, or even as recent as 2021, they had acquired like a 26% share. Mm-hmm. And people were concerned, and I think people, I think people wanted to look on the bright side, and they're like, okay, this is probably like a stock market portfolio sort of thing, whatever, they ended up with this, and easy come, easy go, maybe they'll sell it off in exchange for something else soon. It doesn't look like that. And I had not known that there was actually an electronic gaming development company that Mohammed bin Salman was running. He's trying to get more developers, more development going in Saudi Arabia. It says that they spent the last year throwing money around the video game industry with investments in companies like Activision, Blizzard, Electronic Arts, Take-Two Interactive, Capcom, and Nexon. These are all smaller investments, whereas obviously SNK is, at this point, I mean, it's a full takeover.
How about they invest in human rights? That'd be great.
That'd be nice.
For Saudi Arabia, that'd be fantastic.
So I have not played King of Fighters 15 yet, and I will continue to not, because this is kind of like a hard line for me.
Sure. It's like, this guy owns it. You don't want to be involved. That's fine. The purchase was, this was interesting to me. The shares like for the other, I guess, almost two thirds that they bought remaining $430 million USD. So this is all public stock then. That's it. That's a lot of money for SNK. $430 million to get like the rest of those. That's a lot.
Yep. I feel bad for the people working there. It was said when they initially invested that I heard rumblings that the people who worked there were very disappointed. I don't know what's going to happen with SNK now that he owns 96% of it. I don't know what the future holds for them.
Yeah, they're going to start throwing money around and make themselves look better. They're supposedly, according to this Kotaku article, there's these purchases fall within the Saudi Vision 2030 strategy established during his mid-decade rise to power, which on paper is meant to diversify the kingdom's oil-centric economy. In reality, however, Saudi Vision 2030 is largely a propaganda campaign focused on whitewashing Saudi Arabia's atrocious human rights record. So they're hoping that getting in the in entertainment industries will help soften that a little bit. So
yeah, they want to soften their image, not change their image.
I don't think you can change it.
Yeah, it's upsetting.
It's upsetting. Sorry about that, Ian. You're a big SNK fanboy, and that kind of sucks.
Oh, yeah. No, it blows. Metal Slug Tactics looks really good, too, but that's another one I will have to miss.
Ubisoft is already starting to abandon some of their NFT crap, their court shit that they started only like in November, December. It couldn't last 6 months. It's interesting. We talked about how, remember you said like there was like a number like 27 people bought these NFTs.
I mean, so I think it's funny that they like, so
digits, what they were called, digits. These are like pants and gun skins and helmet shit with money attached through this in-game NFT currency garbage.
So this is from Forbes. On the Ubisoft Quartz Digit site, there's a separate message congratulating those who have claimed Breakpoint NFTs as having left your mark on history. The message also promises more NFT drops. Thank you to all Ghost Recon Breakpoint players who claimed their first digits. You own a piece of the game and have left your mark on its history. As the last digit for Ghost Recon Breakpoint was released on 3/17/2022, stay tuned for more updates with features to the platform and future drops coming with other games. They could have sent that out personally to all 27 people.
They could have just hand wrote letters.
Yeah, they could have knocked that out in a lunch break.
they could have got some little vacation postcards and got them there. So obviously this went bust. People were not people have roundly rejected NFTs in games, thankfully. Here's the issue is that you can't stop supporting these games with these NFTs because then the game falls apart and the marketplace crashes. Hence the whole reason why this is a bad idea.
Well, they talk a little bit about how it's one of the broken promises. It shows that this doesn't work. These NFTs are supposed to be like the whole pitch is that these transfer everywhere. You can use them anywhere in the metaverse. This is just dead DLC now. And you can sell the receipt that you have it, but who the fuck wants it if
no one's
going to
buy
anything?
No one's going to buy it.
Yeah. So the all the talk of, you know, you can use these NFTs to make money once you cash out, you can't. Once the game's dead, this DLC is dead, just like everything else. And they're talking about how there's going to be more NFT drops for other games, meaning that these NFTs are only going to stick to the game that they're released for, which makes it functionally indistinct from DLC. You can't transfer it anywhere. You can't do anything. The only difference is you could sell the receipt for the NFT.
So here's the timeline. This game comes out. Ghost Recon Breakpoint came out October 2019. 2 years later, then they get their NFT shit going. And then less than 6 months after that, we're done supporting this game. The game's not even supported for two. So
you've been fucking had.
Well, those 40 people, whoever, who bought them, who got into it. So in the future, any game that once they announce, again, either the game has to be supported for like a huge, long amount of time. But again, it goes back to the salient quote that someone said, you never want to be the last person owning the NFT. And all these games, at all these games, there's always going to be a last person.
It's hot potato.
Someone has to own an NFT at some point. It doesn't, because you can't use it for anything. You can't consume it. It's used for something. So the last person's always going to get screwed, whether it's a game like this, where they say we're not supporting anymore, Or say the players, as soon as like a significant amount of players leave a marketplace, you crash the economy and what you bought into is worthless. Someone is always left holding the digital bag, so to speak, with this shit. Get in early.
Right.
Well, the people that got in early here, money's gone. Sorry. And whoever bought them for potentially more or less money, their money's gone too. Maybe the first person got out with a small loss. Goddamn NFTs suck ass, and I'm so glad that they're finally like people. There's got to be crashing at this point. They have to be.
Yeah,
they have to be.
I saw a fucking. It was so hard for me to bite my lip. I saw a dude wearing his Bored Ape Yacht Club hoodie to the fucking to get breakfast the other morning.
Like in person, you saw one of these individuals. One of the 400,000 people in the world that are into this.
Yeah, yeah. Wearing a, it was just a Basie hoodie. It didn't have any NFT monkey on it, so I don't know if he's a holder or not.
I mean, are you allowed to like print your NFT on a sweatshirt? Is that what they do?
Ooh, you own it. Ooh, first thing I want to do with this fucking great technology where we don't have to own anything is turn it into an item that I can touch and own.
Well, that's the whole point with them. It's like you're buying into an ecosystem of like merchandising. That's like how they get you in, because otherwise just saying you own a digital receipt pointing to an image doesn't mean anything. It's a whole business opportunity. I saw some of the ape thing animated like cartoon.
Oh, it's so bad.
I couldn't get through it.
I had to watch 10 seconds of it. The animation was miserable.
Animation is miserable. The jokes aren't jokes. They're just saying things that people think might be funny in a funny way. It's awful. I mean, awful. Go watch it out there if you haven't seen it. Just for saying, like, this is the result of the this is the minds behind the NFTs. That this is the entertainment they can make. It's terrible.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
You know what's been a terrible past years? Atari's been terrible.
Atari's been terrible.
Besides Hasteroids. Anything outside of... And these recharge games have been good.
Maybe the recharge games.
They've done two good things in like 15 years, Atari.
Maybe.
So the Atari COO, Fred Arst, stepped down and did an interview.
It's Michael Arts.
Oh, Michael.
Freddie is Chesney.
Fred Chesney.
This is Michael Arts.
Fred Chesney's the one trying to do the fucking NFT stuff in the casino.
Yeah, they shoved him off into the crypto room and they were like, listen, Freddie.
Michael was the one behind the Atari VCS.
Yes.
Which he might think is a success. That's an interview he did that on Season Gaming. He looks like he's doing it from his house office right there. But he did a statement on LinkedIn, basically, like, because he's stepping down. It's been real. It's been fun. It's been real fun. It's time to recharge. After 5 years of nonstop hustle at Atari, it's time for change. Thursday, March 31st was my last day at the company. What an amazing opportunity. Blah, blah, blah. So he basically came on. It was 2017 is when they fucking announced this disastrous VCS.
Yeah.
It was 5 years ago already. It's 5 years ago they did that. He addresses that. Trolls called it a hoax, a scam, vaporware, underpowered Android garbage. It wasn't underpowered, but it's still garbage.
Yes.
And it wasn't Android. It was actually
Linux.
Some Ryzen chip or whatever. I don't fucking know. And many other terrible and completely incorrect things. They did their absolute best to convince the industry that it was never happened. That Atari was a band of crooks, and everyone that contributed to the original Indiegogo campaign would lose their money. That's bad grammar. I always knew they were wrong. I built an amazing team that was willing to follow, held the course, and delivered something authentic and real to the community. In December 2020, in the thick of a pandemic-fueled part shortage, the Atari VCS started landing on backers' doorstep, blah, blah, blah. Okay. He's trying to rewrite history here a little bit.
Yes.
Ian, do you see what's wrong with that right there? When was the original release date of the VCS supposed to have been?
2019, I think. Right? 2018?
I think it was 2018.
Okay.
I'm going to go check it right now. So if this was run competently, it would have came out before the pandemic. So don't tell me about, we have a shortage of parts happening. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, this was supposed to launch before the pandemic. And then it goes on to breathlessly state In December 2020, in the thick of a pandemic-fueled parts shortage, the Atari VCS started landing on backers' doorsteps. The hardware was beautiful and well-built, and the early adopters were finally admiring the real wood we'd promised. Okay, great. We delivered the basics at the beginning. Yeah, VCS Vault, Sandstream Arcade, a few great indie games to play. Backers were thrilled for the most part. They gave us their sincere thanks and their precious feedback. YouTubers started loading them up with Windows and Steam and emulators. Bottom line was that despite the enormous headwinds, Atari delivered what it promised, and it was legit. I don't know that that's true either. The Atari VCS took a hard turn midway through its marketing to really focus on the sandbox aspect of it.
Yes.
Because I think they realized that there wasn't going to be a console aspect to it.
No, there wasn't going to be a bunch of games that were going to be made exclusively for this console.
Since then, there have been many more great games and apps added to the Atari VCS, none of which, by the way, are proprietary or first party or exclusive to the VCS.
And you can get it everywhere else.
Right. Including the ability to play literally any cloud gaming service, Xbox games on an Atari, because almost anything can run cloud gaming. And slowly but steadily improving reviews from both press and the community. While the VCS following may still be modest, it is deeply engaged, and then he talks about how he's moving on. Here's the deal. There's no, user base. This isn't an economy. It's something that people buy one and they're done. They usually make something out of it. And this is, again, something that I've been troubled to see, where success is determined by getting something out, not by how it actually does.
Sure.
If you were to use that as a determination of success, this is a flop. A pointless flop.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was supposed to come out Q2 of 2019. So they were a year and a half behind schedule.
Yeah.
Year and a half. They announced it in 17. They did their campaign in 18. So 2 years after the Kickstarter, Indiegogo's when it came out. And again, why was it at Indiegogo? Because they might not have had a prototype there. One of my biggest complaints about this, you remember that first shiny, well-produced video with some influencers? We have no clue what the hell they played. No clue what they played back in that first video.
Sure.
No clue. That could have been an Android box or something else. That wasn't finalized hardware. You know why we know that? Because they had a tiff with an engineer they fired in the middle of all this. Part of delay. An engineer went after them for money.
Yeah.
The original architect of the system went after them for money. We covered that on the podcast. So I don't appreciate sort of combative statement. Oh, look at all we done in the face. Like, you fucking mismanaged this.
Yeah.
Is it Michael?
Michael.
Michael, you mismanaged this a bit. What was it, $350, $400 the original cost to on this fucking thing?
Yeah, insane.
Since then, there have been many more great games and apps added to the Atari VCS. Several OS updates. Great. Great. You did what you were supposed to
do. Yeah, exactly.
You did the bare fucking minimum, Michael. And
not going to fucking, clap for it.
This is the one thing you did at Atari that we know about that of any worth was the VCS, really? These recharge games, that's not, you hire someone to make those games. That's whatever.
Sure.
That's fine. What else did you do? And then some of the comments congratulating you did an amazing job at Atari. What a ride. Whatever. It's annoying. And I wonder if we're going to get a goodbye note like this for another ex-CEO of a gaming company. If someone relies on your financial support, whether it's a child, aging parent, or even a business partner, you need life insurance. Policy Genius is your one-stop shop to find and buy the insurance you need. Click the link in the description or head to policygenius.com/CU podcast and answer a few questions. In minutes, you can compare personalized quotes from top companies to find your lowest price. You could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. The team of licensed experts at Policy Genius will help you understand your options and apply for the policy you choose. The Policy Genius team works for you, not the insurance companies. You can trust them to offer unbiased help and advocate for you at every step until you're covered.
Policy Genius doesn't add on extra fees, and they will not sell your info to third parties. They have thousands of five-star reviews across Google and Trustpilot. Policy Genius has options that offer coverage in as little as a week and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Since 2014, Policy Genius has helped over 30 million people shop for insurance and placed over $120 billion in coverage.
Head to policygenius.com/CU podcast to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. With that, Ian, in the past week, the console known as the Intellivision Miko that may eventually get released, but probably not to the public. After the podcast happened, after we recorded, it sounds like GameStop figured out what the heck was happening.
Yeah.
In terms of like, we're charging people's credit cards for an item we don't have in stock. That was supposed to come out March 31st. We better give people their money back. And it sounds like they started refunding credit cards.
Yes. And then GameStop removed it entirely. Well, not,
they said it's not available.
It says it's not available. It's not removed entirely, but
you can't pre-order anymore.
Can't pre-order it anymore. And there was, you know, talk of people who had gone in to see what was going on with their Miko pre-orders, and the people at GameStop had never heard of it. While GameStop is definitely partially at fault for charging cards, GameStop, you can't hold the GameStop employees at fault for not knowing anything about the Miko.
No, because no one knows anything about it. And I saw one...
Because no one asks about it. I mean, these are things that you need to take... people never ask the questions they should ask. Like, why don't the GameStop employees know anything about it, the Amico? Because no one's asking about it, and management doesn't think it's important for them to know that. Why? No one's asking, why is GameStop not taking pre-orders on the Amico? No one's asking that.
Sure. I saw one of the cultists. It was a post. It might have been a post that was reiterated from the Intellivision_Miko Reddit that they said they. I can't believe this is embarrassing. They said, I went to my local GameStop and asked the employee about the Amico and what they knew. And it's like, why are you wasting their time?
Was that the same post that was like, so I schooled them in the ways of the Amico?
Did someone say that?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I did not see that.
Someone who went in there, like someone who was talking about checking on their... Their pre-order said that they like schooled the employee on the ways of the Amico, which means they probably gave them some really unconvincing 10-minute spiel.
Sure. So after that, I guess to save face, and I guess because they realize we need to show interest to potential investors on the Intellivision Amico Facebook group, they posted the following, Ian. Are you ready? This came out.
I retweeted this.
You had some words. I ignored it at the time. I was like, what is this? As we continue to adapt and keep pushing forward with our launch, we have some changes that we want to share with you about the status of our pre-ordering, pricing, and SKU availability. First, rest assured that for all existing orders, in all caps, for those folks who have made an initial deposit, your place in line will not be altered and your price remains the same. So what are they doing, Ian? They want to make sure the people they have the money from those $100, they keep their money.
Yes.
They keep their money. And this is why. For new orders, caps, as we work through a continually evolving supply chain, our pricing has changed to the following. Drum roll, price increase coming. Galaxy Purple, $290 for a console with one controller. $340 for a console with two controllers, and the same for the vintage wood grain, which was the early orders backers, and then the black and white ones. No new orders are being accepted at this time.
So before we get any further, three things jump out.
A lot of things jump out.
Yeah, but three are big. One
big.
The foundation of the Intellivision Amico, as spoken by Tommy Tallarico, is at this point 100% obliterated. There is nothing that was said initially that is now true. The games are going to be more expensive. It's not going to come with two controllers out of the box. So you can't sit down with your family.
Well, unless you spend more money.
Unless you spend more money. There is now a cheaper option there's a cheaper and a more expensive option. And the basic SKU only comes with one controller. And $250 it was not affordable for families, but people really tried to argue it. Well, the two controllers and
six
the
games,
six premium games. you got to do it that way. Premium games.
What are you pumping up a bicycle tire?
Yeah. Premium pumping. pumping. So it's not cheap anymore. At $290 with one controller, it is no longer affordable. The A in affordable is gone.
And without
the A in safe,
without two controllers, you can't say co-op anymore. Family co-op. You say, well, Pat, you can use a phone for that. And our argument was, well, then why not just put the games on phones if a phone can do it? And we were told, no, you need the controller to play these games.
Yeah, I was angrily told that I need it.
So which is it? Do you need the controllers to play these games for two people, or do you not?
You don't.
And it sounds like you don't.
And I think the smart thing to have done would have been to. He's so attached.
There's no smart thing to be done.
No, so attached to that controller. It's going to be the death. I mean, it's the albatross. It's the death. But he's so, and it, honestly, probably it's, so much money has been put into the controller.
It's
already
an over-engineered nightmare.
I don't know why they didn't, like, I'm surprised they didn't do a no controller. I'm not surprised, but they could have.
We always said that you get rid of the controller and just put, like, USB ports. You can plug in a regular controller that you have later
right.
to play it.
But if you get rid of the controller, there's even less of a reason for this system to exist.
No. And from my source, not anyone else's source, is my source, that the cost of this controller, the bill of materials, is probably around $40 to $50, probably.
Yeah.
$50 for a family-friendly console. What happens if that controller breaks? What happens if you want to buy a new one?
And that means build cost?
Yes.
Right, which means that they're making no money on this controller.
They'd have to charge like $80 for another controller, $70, $80 for it, and bank on that. So the thing, that at that point, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. So the whole cost of this console might be $150. 50 times two controllers and maybe $50 for the base unit, just to make it. That's nuts for a console like this. That's insane for that. Anyway, so that's interesting. You're admitting that you don't need these controllers.
Well, you're admitting that you don't need these controllers, but you're also the whole it coming with two controllers thing was a big part of the.
It was also a lie.
Yes. But this is for families.
Yeah, there's
for families. Right out of the box, you're playing this with someone because this is a system meant for multiplayer. This is meant for couch multiplayer, and now you're throwing that out the window. The thought of playing a Miko alone is like so sad. So sad.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, that's probably a lot of like the old school and television fans that would like.
Hey, your solo Miko experience.
So that's bad. The price has doubled. Let's gloss over that. The original price port was between $149 and $179. The price has doubled.
Yes.
It's doubled.
Literally doubled.
If you want to say the average of that is like 160, it's more than doubled. 170, it's doubled. It's nuts. It's doubled. And then, of course, going back to that, the lie that this would have been the only first console with two-packing controllers since the Super Nintendo, even though there are several glaring examples of that happening after that. But that's fine. That's fine. The other weird thing that stands to me, why did they say 290 and not 300 and 340 and not 350?
To keep it cheaper than the Switch. Keep it $10 cheaper than the Switch.
To show that there's some weird value that exists where this is $10 less than a Switch. Families would prefer this. $10 over a $300 purchase. Do the pat math. 10 over 300 ain't much.
And it's not even a fair comparison because, yes, people don't love the Joy-Cons, but for $10 more, you'd have two controllers.
Yes.
As opposed to... So, really, the comparison is between 300 and 340. But, yes, they obviously kept it $10 shy of the big price points the competition are using, like the Xbox Series S, too.
They're worried about people spending... you're spending 3%, 3.3% less on something. That's what they're worried about. That's a price that's going to get families to buy it.
Also, I haven't really seen anyone talking about this. This is the Amico, the shell stuff. And maybe it has been covered, but I haven't seen it. The whole no black and white thing. That makes sense. That tells of a company that does not have a lot of money, and here's why. They focused heavily on, you can tell from the pictures they've taken of the systems, they focused heavily on the purple and the wood grain initially. One, because I think they wanted to show people, hey, this is fancy, look what you're going to get if you pre-order through GameStop, look what you'll get if you pre-order through us, the wood grain. But those are the things that I think they have the tooling for. I did see some people say that, why wouldn't they do black and white, because black and white is cheaper plastic. I don't think they've made any progress on that. They've got to get the wood grain and the purple out.
Well, no, this is why, Ian. Those were cheaper. Those were $50 cheaper. They don't want people to get the cheaper option. That's why.
Sure, but the other, they would have raised the price on that too. I think the other reason why is, in terms of what's already spoken for, like what they feel like they have to get out, it's mostly wood grain units, and then they're expecting people to go over to them, and we haven't talked about this yet, to go over to them for the Galaxy Purple. What Intellivision did, and this is a shitty move on my part, but people are championing it. Some people are...
Shitty move on your part?
No, this is a shitty move on Intellivision's part that I'm about to bring up. And some people in the Pro Amico group are like applauding it. Intellivision came out and said, oh, if you had an order canceled by GameStop, send your money over this way and we'll get you back on that pre-order. Oh, actually, I don't think you have to put money down.
No deposit required.
Okay. They want to get people's...
They want to show interest.
They want to see the numbers. Yes, they want to see the numbers.
Which is disingenuous, because it doesn't matter. Anyone can say, I want to buy something without any money down. It means nothing.
Yeah, if you don't put your money where your mouth is, it's meaningless.
But that's so I'm a little bit... this is what I look at it. They want to tell you that, well, the price is going up, but since the Galaxy Purple and the Vintage Wood Grain are limited ones, you're going to spend more money on it, so who cares? That's why, to me, why they're not offering black and white, because they want more of your money. They can justify the price raise with these, quote, limited versions of it, but they can't do it with the black and white. That's my opinion.
I agree with what you're saying, but...
They have no room for error here.
They could have just said they were raising the price on the black and white ones, too. I really think it's because this is all they've been focusing on. Tommy knows the first systems that have to go out are going to be wood grain systems.
Yes.
That's why he's focusing on the wood grain.
Those are the early Founders Edition ones back then. So back to their note. Effective today, we are halting further pre-orders on black and white models. This helps us optimize our first manufacturing run to consist mostly of the colors that already have the highest volume. Yes, that makes sense. For all new orders, no deposit will be required until we finalize and announce a manufacturing date. Your order will just hold your place in line for delivery. And it gives us a good sense around initial order volume. Why do you think they won't need that? To hook someone to keep the company alive.
Right.
Which in turn helps us with our new supply chain agreements. As the development of this console has gone for over 3 years and through a component impacted in pandemic, we have to alter our pricing to meet the needs of the business while bringing Amico to you. As you would expect, we tried very hard to hold our originally published pricing. Unable to do that, we have introduced the single controller package as a budget-friendly alternative for customers who are happy to use their smartphones as additional controllers with our free Amico controller app. Yeah, where's the development of that app? The app has been updated in at least a year and a half, I think, at this point. The app has had no updates. We're going to rely upon that as well while you're doing your cloud. Lastly, if your GameStop pre-order was canceled, we will honor your GameStop's $300 price on a replacement pre-order directly with us for either Galaxy Purple or Vintage Wood Grain with two controllers. As you place your new pre-order, please send a copy of your canceled GameStop receipt or email to Intellivision. When placing your new pre-order, please use the same email address that you used for your original GameStop order to help us match them up, because I guess Intellivision isn't going to, excuse me, GameStop's not sending them the customer list. That's probably, they can't do that legally, or they don't want to.
Right.
It's like, no, that's our information. We're not giving that to you there. What a fun trip this has been, right?
Yeah. And there are people who think this means it's closer to release.
No.
If GameStop is canceling all, GameStop wants the money. All $27 they got off of this for pre-orders.
I have no idea. This is what's happening, I think. I think that going back to the, we talked about this, part of the Republic agreement was like making consoles to get potentially some of the money, maybe. And there's a certain amount, I don't know if it's 200 or 300, whatever the fuck it was, that for some reason, part of the agreement, like Republic has to receive consoles.
Right.
That's part of their agreement here. I don't know if that means that they're going to just manufacture several hundred by hand and do it. And then, again, we have no idea. We talk about the Bavarian grants. We have no idea what how that money gets excused or what how it gets paid back. If it's a condition to create make consoles that someone in Germany has to look at me, oh, we didn't get scammed, we have some consoles. I have no idea what happens. But I do know this. They're taking a loss. You can't do small runs of stuff like this. You can't.
No, absolutely not.
Multiple boards for both the controllers and the console. Doing small runs like this, you are losing tons of money doing small runs. You have to set up the lines. You have to train the employees on the line. It's not like automated with robots, man. There's people putting these things together.
Yeah.
People are putting these things together. You have to test for faulty runs and talk about Playdate discovered a bunch of faulty batteries. And that's a company that product's out now. You know, there could be revisions have to be done still. This thing we know hasn't been completed, their FCC, filings and things like that. So I don't know what this means totally. I don't know. I'm like now 50-50 if that they're going to try to put out like several hundred of these to some people to fulfill requirements with, say, the Bavarian Grants folks and with Republic. I have no idea what direction this goes. All I know is this. They don't have money. They don't have money.
Can I be honest with you for a second?
Just okay.
Every time I hear the word Bavarian, I think of a nice donut. A
Bavarian donut?
Yeah.
What style is Bavarian donut eat?
Bavarian cream.
Oh, it's Bavarian cream.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways. That's all.
Okay, that's it?
I just want to let you know.
Should that be part of the grants agreement? Get some nice couple dozen donuts?
Yeah.
Get a baker's dozen? I don't have a huge amount more to say about this because at this point, it's running out of steam.
I'm running out of steam. We are running out of steam. We're running out of steam. We don't have a whole lot more to say.
But there's still people that are holding out hope for this.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
But I will say this. I am glad that, I think we talked about this last week. I'm glad that Atari Age is allowing a critical thread 2.5 years too late.
Oh, sure.
That they are about, is the Amico dead? And there's some fun stuff in there, including a really great long thread that Kevtris analyzed looking at boards and pictures of boards that were like from parts of like Tommy's office tours and stuff pegged on someone's wall, different revisions, looking at the control, identifying like what's happening with these boards, how they've been just underdeveloped in terms of like having multiple boards for your console instead of only one, and some good insight as to the process of what goes into making a console. Mm-hmm. Since Kevtris has made consoles
right
through Analog. So check it out. And that's all I got to say about this week.
Yeah. Oh, we've got a Patreon.
Why'd you say it like that, Ian?
Sorry, it was because something was rumbling.
It's like you were disgusted with the Patreon.
I was disgusted with myself.
No, we Patreon.com.
We're Patreon! Woo!
Patreon.com/CU podcast.
You give money.
You pay.
And
Ian writing once a week. We do a Google Hangout once a month. We have an exclusive podcast every week for you all. And you get to vote on these polls.
Poll topics. What do we got?
In second place, the top NES games rating to listicle, 40%. In first place, a healthy 60% impressive Game Boy ports. I guess this can mean arcade ports or ports from other consoles.
Game Boy has many impressive arcade ports, many versions of games that have been taken from the arcade and shrunken down for the Game Boy that have worked out well. They also have really good interpretations of certain games. So almost not like a direct port, but I mean, it's a port in terms of what the Game Boy can do. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bad ones, too. What was interesting to me to see during the 90s was how many popular fighting games got ported to the Game Boy.
Do you want to start with some of these arcade ports first?
I was going to start with the fighting game ports.
Go for it.
Street Fighter II, Mortal Kombat, Mortal Kombat 2, Killer Instinct.
That's so funny that Killer Instinct was on that. An N64 game. It's so funny.
Super Nintendo game. Well, and N64, oh, yeah, sure. Killer Instinct. Samurai Showdown, King of Fighters, Battle Arena Toshinden, World Heroes, just tons and tons of fighting games.
I didn't know Battle Arena Toshinden was on there, really.
Yes, and we're going to get to that in a second because that's one of the absolute best ones. And you would think that not a lot of these fighting games would be particularly fun with two buttons. And in some instances, you'd be right. Mortal Kombat is not very good on the Game Boy. King of Fighters, not King of Fighters. King of Fighters is okay. Not as good as what would later be on the Neo Geo Pocket.
Two buttons, you can get away with a Mortal Kombat more than Street Fighter.
What else was I going to say? So those ones weren't great. Killer Instinct, not great. Street Fighter, on the other hand, plays really well, despite having only two buttons. I think it's only missing one character, one or two characters.
I think it's missing two, but I'll look it up.
And it's really fun. I still go back and play through Street Fighter 2 on the Game Boy every once in a while with Chun-Li. It's a really fun game, and it's impressive to me that they took the first popular fighting game and managed to make a port of it on the Game Boy that, while definitely lacking features, was still fun and playable.
Oh, Street Fighter 2. Oh, they included this is like a champion edition. They included M. Bison,
right,
and Balrog and Sagat.
But so is anyone missing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's no Dalsim. They probably couldn't
do the wings. Dalsim. Yep.
There's no E. Honda. And there's no Vega, but I probably couldn't do the jumping around. So yeah. There's
so there are some missing, but they try to make up for it by adding some of the dash.
I'm surprised there's nine, because I know Mortal Kombat, they have
Mortal Kombat, I think, is five. Even on the Game Gear, it's pretty low.
Let me check that right now. But you're saying overall, though, for a Game Boy, it does a decent job?
Yeah, it does a decent job. And then the SNK games are a bit of a more mixed bag, which is interesting because Takara did the ports for all of those. The King of Fighters one is okay. Samurai Showdown, okay. But
no Johnny Cage on Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. But the port they did of World Heroes Jet is actually a lot of fun. That one actually plays very well. And then we get to what I think is one of the best two-button fighters out there. And I'm a big Neo Geo Pocket Color fan, but this is still among my top portable fighters. Battle Arena Toshinden on the Game Boy. They took a 3D fighter.
Let's see this.
They took a 3D fighter, and they turned it into a sprite-based fighter. But they kept a really interesting facet of the original game. So 3D fighters like Battle Arena Toshinden and Soul Calibur and stuff like that, they have ring outs, right, where you can get knocked out of the ring.
Oh, this was adorable.
They kept it for the Game Boy version. And how they kept it was it's a 2D fighter, but on the ends, instead of being walls, there's edges. Yes. And when you get to the edges, you can actually, there's a separate like ring out meter, and you can beat people down along the edges, and you can actually ring out them in the 2D game. And it's very fun, very responsive. All the characters are snappy. It's simple to learn. It's got great fucking graphics for a black and white for the original Game Boy. It's unbeatable. I mean, it's so fucking good. I really can't recommend it enough.
It's adorable.
Awesome.
Who did this game? Takara.
Yeah, Takara.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I implied that this was an SNK property. It's not. This is obviously a different property.
So this is an interesting point in time, because obviously this is a big PlayStation launch title.
It's a PlayStation original. It's no one looks back on it fondly, but at the time it was a launch 3D fighting game.
Yeah, so I'm surprised that Nintendo's like, yeah, we'll do a, but it's almost like,
well, it was not, on the Saturn too. It was not a Sony exclusive.
Sure,
it could have gone anywhere,
but it was marketed heavily.
Yes,
that
it was.
Game when, yeah. For the PlayStation. I'm just surprised to see that like Nintendo was okay putting the game, but it's a totally different game. Obviously, looking at it, it's like you could have called it something else.
Yeah, you absolutely could. They took the characters and they took the basic ring out concept, which at the time would have been more unique, and they turned it into a really competent 2D fighting game. I love it.
This could have been like an NES game, maybe. Like maybe. It's adorable.
It's so good.
So that's a good one. So any other fighters? But yeah, I'm glad you showed me this one. I never heard of that.
No, that's the best fighter, I think, on the system.
What about the just regular arcade games? Like, remember they did like the two packs with like Centipede, like a Missile Command or something like that?
Yeah, in Japan there was even one with Mappy.
Asteroid / Missile Command. That's the one. I think I own that one. And then Centipede / Millipede they did.
Again, I don't really touch those, not because I don't expect them to be accurate, but because Asteroids you could play. Missile Command needs a fucking trackball. Centipede and Millipede, I don't want to play without a trackball. I just don't.
Yeah, it's rough.
I mean, maybe
it goes faster across, but it's rough.
Right. I don't like to do it. Now, obviously on a Game Boy, and I should try it out, the game is probably much smaller and it probably works better without a trackball. But the Missile Command, I have no real interest in playing without an actual trackball.
I'm curious to try Paperboy.
Paperboy is fun.
It looks, just from looking at it, looks like it's somewhat like the NES one.
Yep.
A lot of those NES and Game Boy games are almost not one-to-one, but they're close.
Data East did really, really good arcade ports on the... two in particular. One I always mention on the Game Boy. Burger Time Deluxe.
You love your Burger Time.
And Lock and Chase. I love Burger Time as time goes on, specifically because of Burger Time Deluxe. It's perfect. The boards are the right size. They're the right shape. The AI is right. It's learnable. It doesn't fucking hate you when you stop one pixel shy of ladder and you get stuck on the ladder trying to get off or get on. It's just really, really well done and very cute. And the difficulty ramps up perfectly throughout. It's like, I think it's 25 levels. And then its Lock and Chase version is similarly cute and well done.
I mean, I'm looking at being a Paperboy expert. I'm looking at the Game Boy version. I mean, it's the NES version. They probably changed the aspect a little bit.
They did.
But, like, it's the... I'm looking at the graphics and the throw. It's the, same game.
It's got pretty much everything in it. I don't think anything is missing. Interesting. I'm just as bad at it as I am on any other version, so I think it's accurate enough.
Paperboy is a weird game in general. I can go off on Paperboy and how weird.
At first, you got to play Stay Alive, and then you work the papers back in.
Yes. I mean, that's basically how it is, but you have to get used to the Kings game. But no, I'm kind of amazed that it's exactly the same.
It's good.
The course is the same at the end. They basically, like I said, they just changed the asset ratio, I think, a little bit. You can't see as much left to right on the screen, it looks like.
Sure.
It's not as wide. It's more squarish. Cool. All right. And then, any Game Boy Color ones, or sticking with your good old black and white?
Yeah, just mostly sticking with the black and white, but as far as like Game Boy Color.
Any Q-Bird or Kix in the original?
The Kix.
The Kix
port for the original Game Boy is awesome.
That's an earlier title, right?
It is, and it's most people don't realize that it is a Nintendo-fied version of the game.
Oh, it is? I didn't know that.
Yeah, you don't notice it when you're actually playing, but every once in a while there's a little intermission with Mario dressed up like he's from different countries. So
that's adorable.
There's a somewhat culturally insensitive Mario in a sombrero. There's all these weird like little intermissions.
This is like part of their first run of Game Boy games where you have to have Mario
Yeah, exactly. It was like, it must have been like an early release where they found a way to work Mario in there somewhere.
I never was good at Kix.
I'm good at that one.
Like, I feel like, oh, I'm doing great. Then you get your ass kicked like 3 or 4 stages in, and it's like, okay, I don't have what it takes.
Right. Yeah. It gets tough quick too, because you very quickly they have you needing to cover like 90%.
Oh, like a huge amount.
Yeah, you've got to cover. Oh, it's not like cover 75% anymore. It's like you've got to get all of this.
And then you find yourself doing the little mini squares and rectangles that take forever.
My mom taught me how to play Kix really well.
Your mom taught you how to play Kix?
Make little minis.
Do little minis?
Yeah. It's with the two level. Her technique was always the center technique. And I'm sure there's a better one, but she would just make this little tower in the middle. She'd build it up slowly and then wait until the Kix were separated and just
and cut off one part of the screen.
If you split the Kix, you don't have to cover anything. If you split the Kix, you move on to the next level and you get a bonus.
Oh.
In the first like 4 or 5 levels, there's always one Kix, but very quickly there's two Kix, and if you split them, that's how you can get past it fast.
I gotta thank Mama Ferguson. Yeah, that's hip. I never thought about that. That's pretty good, Ian.
She's good.
That's pretty good. All right. Good. Anything else on this Retronauts topic that we want to cover about this?
No.
No, you're thinking like any other ports? I'm sorry, Ian. I'm not I didn't grow up with a Game Boy. I don't have a huge amount to add with that. But
but I only had like 5 games.
I am fascinated by those first like 2 years or so of the Game Boy and like how so many like arcade single screen games are like on there and ports. Like that's basically what the console
was. That's what drew me to it because I mean, what I love about the Game Boy is, I mean, when you get into it, you do glorified. Start to like the longer games and stuff like that. Like there are some fun RPGs and, you know, platformers that are longer. But what I love about the Game Boy is it's high concentration of pick up and play titles that are done really, really well.
Sure. And then the oddities, like, yeah, seeing Mortal Kombat on the system. And it's like, what poor kid got Mortal Kombat on the Game Boy? Like, I'm just thinking about that. Like, in like 4 frames a second animation, it looks terrible. on there. And obviously, the no fatalities and things like that that are, well, I mean, there's fatalities, but you get the same crappy ones. This segment of the CU podcast is brought to you by Blissey. Blissey offers silk pillowcases, which give you better hair, better skin, and incredible sleep. This is a completely natural and hypoallergenic silk pillowcase designed by a team of experts that does wonders for your overall health while you sleep. Look, they come in these nice little boxes. You can easily gift wrap these and you're ready to go. And they are available in a variety of colors.
Blissey is non-toxic and hypoallergenic. Silk's hypoallergenic and antibacterial properties naturally repel allergens, and no toxic chemicals or dyes are used in their products. They can reduce hair breakage by up to 43% while you sleep due to the smooth surface of the Blissey pillowcase. Blissey silk fibers are less absorbent than those of cotton, allowing your skin to retain more moisture. And do you sleep hot or cold? I definitely sleep really, really hot. Blissey can help. Silk by nature has low conductivity and acts as a thermal regulator. And silk's protein-based fiber is moisture-wicking and helps prevent night sweats. Blissey has earned high praise from Good Housekeeping, Oprah's O Magazine, Allure, Glamour, Pop Sugar, Birdie, She Knows, Prevention, and Pure Wow.
Get the most thoughtful gift that mom will use and remember every night. Go to blissey.com/CU podcast or just click the link below and you'll get an additional 30% off your order and free worldwide shipping. Help your loved ones get your energy back, sleep better, and even improve their hair and skin with Blissey silk pillowcases. That's blissy.com/CU podcast or just click the link below. The code is automatically applied at checkout for an additional 30% off. We got voicemails. Go to anchor.fm/CU podcast. You go, you leave a voicemail, maybe 20, 25 seconds is a sweet spot, and hopefully we get you on. Hopefully you ask something something that we want to hear about. And here's the first one.
What is up, Pat and Ian? This is AB Grunis coming to you from central Pennsylvania. And no, I don't have any friendlies nearby, so I can't bask in the glory that is friendlies. And what's going on? What? Asteroids? Wait, the world's coming to an end? Hater Smash was actually a real thing. Quick, run for your lives. I know the first thing that you want to think about right now is, damn it, the Amico is definitely not coming out now, but that's not the point. The point is, if something like this were actually going to happen, what is the one thing that out of anything that you've done, you want future civilizations to remember you from?
What is it, Ian? That energy sapped my energy. What's it?
I could make a mean meal.
A mean meal.
That's all I want people to know me for.
So that boy
could cook.
On your tombstone,
yeah.
Ian can make a mean meal.
Ian can make a mean meal.
And a little picture of Ian like holding like a tray of like a meatloaf or something.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think about that. Mortality is hitting us maybe my 40s. Ian's almost 40, right, this year?
Yeah, this year.
I always forget your birthday. I have it marked down. August, right?
Yeah, and you're May something.
Yeah, we're close enough. So yeah, I don't think about it much. Obviously, we're gonna. It's weird because with social media, everyone can be remembered in the future as long as servers are up. For the good old MySpace and Facebook and everything and Twitter. Think about that. Think about future hundreds from years from now. Like there will be no question about how culture was, how people lived, because we are all recording our lives every day now. It's really weird.
Yeah, the future of history is going to be interesting.
Yeah, it's almost going to be too much to examine.
Yeah, now it's going to be how much can we? We're going to have more than we need.
Yeah, because everyone's life is going to be recorded.
Yep.
Basically, it's. But yeah, I don't know. I want to have the books and entertainment and stuff. I don't know. I guess. I don't think about it. I'll be gone. What do I care?
Hi guys, it's Daryl from Buffalo again. I just got done watching your 100 stream. I'm watching commercials on Twitch. And Pat, you stated you did not like Nick Arcade. You gave somewhat of an answer. Can you go more into detail on why you don't like Nick Arcade?
I hate Nick Arcade.
All right, guys. Hope to see you soon. Have a good day.
Okay, maybe I was wrong. I don't hate Nick Arcade. Nick Arcade was disappointing, and yes. This is why. Oh, sorry, you go, Ian.
Sorry. Nick Arcade, I liked Phil.
Well, we know Phil. Phil's great.
And Phil was great. My problem with Nick Arcade was that the kids who played the games they always seem to pick games that they wanted to play because they wanted to try them out because they were new, not games that they knew. Kids always seem to pick games that for the video challenge that they had no idea how to play. And then the actual video game stuff that they brought in, the weird like board that you moved, it just, as a game show, it didn't function very well. And the Nick Arcade stuff at the end of it was always awful. Disappointing to watch.
The virtual reality shit from the early 90s that they did back then, because they had it like Liberty State Park, like you shot a basketball on the screen. That stuff is miserable. The one
you stand in front, I did something miserable. Exactly like you stand in front of a screen,
a projected screen. It's miserable.
And you have to like interact with it like this.
It's miserable. That's not a video game,
right?
The problem with Nick Arcade is it's 90% nothing to do with video games.
Yeah.
They do about two video challenges per episode, maybe three, where you see a game play for literally like, 45 seconds?
The face-off games are always some like form of Breakout or something like that. They're not good.
But those were video games. I forget what company went on.
I believe it was Psygnosis made those.
Yeah, that was a famous company that did those. But that was a video game at least.
Sure.
But like, I wanted to see, this was not Starcade. Starcade is still like every question had to do with a video game. The questions they ask were nothing but video games. Oh, what is like what a Nick Arcade question would be a random trivia about anything, food or whatever. Then they would do like, oh, here's an image on the board, and we're gonna slowly unblur it and then buzz in when you know what it is. Oh, it's a bunch of pretzels. It had nothing to do with video games.
It's a bunch of pretzels.
Starcade was a video game show.
It was video game adjacent. They tried to work on the popularity of video games, but for a normal quiz game show, and it just didn't work.
No. I might have been a licensing thing with Nickelodeon. A lot of the one good thing about Nick Arcade, the one good thing, they had some esoteric game selections for the Genesis, and they had Super Nintendo games. You wouldn't be like, oh, that's a weird. Oh, why do they got the fucking Toki spitting ape game on one of the episodes for Genesis? Like,
yeah,
that's a weird game to have.
They used to always have El Viento. I remember El Viento being online. That's a great game, but that's a weird Genesis game to pick.
And I forget if they had Neo Geo or not. I always forget if that's my
I don't recall if they ever had Neo Geo. They definitely did Turbo.
They had Turbo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. They had like Legendary Axe or Bonk.
I'm pretty sure Air Zonk was on there once.
Sure. So they did some weird, cool stuff, but it was not video game related outside of that.
Yep.
Next one here. Northern New York.
Pat, Ian, this is Matt from Rochester, New York again. Now, this is where I'm going to get a little salty and abrasive.
Oh, Matt.
Turtles 2, the arcade game for the NES. Mm. Yes, I know it's not arcade perfect by any means.
Not arcade perfect.
But for me, that's like all I had growing up. Arcades were scarce and expensive, but with that in mind, was there any games for the NES or Super Nintendo or whatever that you felt the same way? They're not arcade perfect, but you loved them anyway. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, Paperboy.
I mean, you could also say Contra, but no, I can't think of anything that I like.
Well, Contra's better than the arcade.
Yeah, it's better than the arcade, yes. Yeah. But I can't think of that. But I mean, to be honest, no, I can't think of anything that I played a bunch of that I liked better on the NES that would have been an arcade game. But I didn't spend a whole lot of time in arcades as a kid. I went to them. My dad took me, but it's not like, I mean, I was up to date on all that stuff. When Nintendo games, when like true arcade ports of Nintendo games were coming out, I was kind of young to be thinking about them. And then as the Nintendo went on, you had more and more stuff developed for it, and you got less and less of those arcade ports because it couldn't handle them.
I thought Cabal was a really good port at the time. Then again, I didn't play it that much. The one pizzeria had it with the trackball, greasy pizza hands on the trackball, and it's nice at the trackball, but like that was like, I'm not saying it was better, but they did such a good job that I played the hell out of Cabal, even though it's a relatively short game on that.
I was just gonna say Bump and Jump, Burn and Rubber, that's actually one game I think I do like better. The graphics aren't as nice, but I like the simpler. But that's the thing. I like the simpler, like blockier, cartoonier graphics. So I think it actually fits it better.
That's one of those games you always forget on the NES. Bump and Jump. It's like, oh, Bump and Jump's on the NES.
It's fun.
I love rediscovering games that because the library is so vast,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. Next one here.
Hey Pat and Ian, this is CU Podcast Memes with an on the ground friendlies report.
Okay.
I just went home to Massachusetts to visit my family where I'm originally from, and I was very upset to see that a lot of the Friendly's locations from my childhood were turned into Wendy's and walk-in clinics and all kinds of stuff like that. So I finally found a Friendly's that was still open, and the waitress was talking about how they no longer produce the roll-shaped ice cream cakes. like the Jubilee roll and the watermelon roll, and that the factory that makes those just decided to stop producing them.
Oh, no.
Next thing I was on Google Maps, and I saw that all the New Jersey locations are still holding strong, so that's great. But for whatever reason, Friendly's in Massachusetts, where they're from, is really struggling, and I do not like that. They were an institution growing up. So, yeah, not a question, just an update for you guys.
Thank you, CU Podcast Memes. That's an important Friendly's update. Yeah, whenever I go back to a convention, there's always still one around, either in Connecticut or in the Jersey convention, Ian, or Pennsylvania. There's not as many, but they're hanging on. Like, from what I hear, like, some there's corporate-owned ones and there's franchisees. Like, they're hanging on. They've lost, like, a chunk of them over the past 20 years or so, but there's always going to be Friendly's, knock on wood, I believe. I believe that.
Yeah.
Now, not making watermelon roll anymore? Now, that's insane. Like, I need that verified from corporate. I need that verified. Like, that. Are you nuts?
Yeah, that's crazy.
The first time I went to Syracuse, Ian, was part of the insane 2016 fall tour I did when the book first came out. I did like 9 conventions in like, I don't know, 16 weeks or something, whenever it was.
Yipes.
And I went to Syracuse, and it was the last one of the year. I was out of my feet. I was done. People that were there for that, they can attest to that. But my panel, I remember, and this was recorded, but the video's never surfaced. I went on some like insane 10-minute Friendly's rant because I was just so done by that point and out of my mind. And I talked about the brilliance of their artistry and the genius of the watermelon roll and the sundaes and the witch cones and things like that. And that footage is out there. And supposedly that person never gave the convention center the footage of all the panels. I want to see how nuts I was talking about that. Just free flowing riffing on Friendly's ice cream like that.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Adam from Nashville. I'm a few episodes behind, but I just heard you guys talking about places where you would get your gaming news back in the day. And what I didn't hear were gaming magazines. For me personally, I had subscriptions to GamePro and EGM, and I was addicted to those magazines. So just curious if you had any fond memories or if you hated them or what. Thanks, guys. Love the podcast.
Well, I mean, obviously, I had Nintendo Power, and I loved it. I had Nintendo Power from 88 until 94, I think I had. 94, I think, is when I had the first 60 or so issues of Nintendo Power.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Nintendo Power. I had, you know, Nintendo Power growing up. It was great. But, you know, after... once the focus like went over to like pretty much strictly Super Nintendo, even before that, but by the time it got to strictly Super Nintendo, I was out. I remember getting it.
Issues. Well, I still would have Game Boy in there, but yeah.
I remember getting issues with like, I remember getting like the Final Fantasy IV issue and I think like the Final Fight issue. So early on, and then I stopped getting it. And then for a long time, I didn't have a magazine. And honestly, I didn't miss them because, as I always said, my dad had a computer early on for school and work. I was using the internet early. I was finding video game websites early. So I, you know, when a lot of people the era that they remember of looking through magazines, a lot of that was me going through early websites. I did end up with a subscription to PSX, the unofficial PlayStation magazine, which I think people there eventually turned into IGN. I enjoyed that magazine when I had it for the year or two I had it, because I was mostly just playing PlayStation at the time. And then I ended up with a Game Informer subscription because I think everyone did at some point through buying something at GameStop. And I had a Game Informer subscription for a little while. But I know, they were always amusing reads, but that was never like my first source of information. Oh, no. It was always a secondary source, something to read on the toilet. But like, other than Nintendo Power, it was never my primary source of gaming.
Yeah, I didn't have internet until 93. I didn't have internet. So like, you know, I probably couldn't access that stuff anyway, but I couldn't, my parents wouldn't get me 2 subscriptions. I had to beg for Nintendo Power to get the one. So, and that was my main console anyway. By the time you get to 93 and computers, I think what I would do is this. I was going to Sunday Circulars and see what was there for, because the computer games weren't really that advertised. I would go to the computer store with my father on Sunday and look, literally read the back of the boxes and be like, oh, okay, this looks fun, and take a gamble that way. And that's how I purchased some of those games. That's how I purchased like
I don't think I remember I purchased Warcraft 1 and 2. There was a combo deal at Computer City. Buy 2, get one, get the first one free. I had never seen the game before. And I said, this looks fun. I'm buying it.
Right.
It's from the box.
Yeah.
You took a gamble.
Yeah. There was a lot of that, too.
You had to look for this magazine said this on the box, like things like that, like 5 stars according to whatever the hell.
Yeah, back when you actually looked for quotes like that, and that stuff mattered.
Yeah, absolutely, because it wasn't a huge amount of things happening with those. I'll do a few more here.
Hey, Pat, Ian, Calvin from Toronto here. My question is, with Cobra Kai being as popular as it is, what other properties do you think would benefit from the changed perspective and storytelling, just like they did with Johnny Lawrence? Thanks. Wish you guys the best.
Well, that one was interesting because that was always a meme about Johnny was really the hero of that. And they made that into the full, now it's they're going to the fifth season. I don't know how much longer they can do it, but they're hanging on. And the first season was outstanding. And then they're still interesting, but whatever. It's getting tiresome after 4 seasons of it.
But I was tired of it after 1 or 2. I thought it was good and made a good, strong first impression, but it wasn't something I wanted to see dragged out to multiple seasons.
Yes.
If they had done 2 seasons of it and wrapped up the story, I would probably be saying a lot of really, really good things. I just didn't really have the desire to see it drawn out and to see allegiances change and all that. I just wanted
It's a soap opera.
Yeah.
It's become a soap opera versus like just a straight sort of like drama.
Plus
Johnny's like sort of been thrown to the side now for all the kids. And I get that. But Johnny was the basis of the show. Like it was following
him. Right.
It was less Ralph Macchio in the first season, and then it became 50-50.
A little 2-season redemption story would have been great. I would have loved it. But I'm on record here a lot of times saying I don't like stuff that drags on and on and on. I like my stories to be relatively succinct.
So is there another property where you can change perspective like that at the top of your head?
It's a great question. It's just not one that I think I can really answer right now. But I would almost put that down in return to it if I could think of something that would be, good or useful.
Sure. But Cobra Kai has been enjoyable. It's just I like the callback to characters. I like the episode where they had all the original Cobra Kai together for the last time. Like, that was great.
Like I said, it's fine. I get why people like it. It's just not for me.
It was cute. There was a kid that dressed up as Cobra Kai for Halloween a couple years ago. And I thought that was just like, this kid was not, the kid's like 7 years old dressing up like Johnny Lawrence. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's really weird to see that new generation liking Karate Kid because that died out.
Oh, jeez. Gilbert Gottfried is dead.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, Gilbert.
Just found that out 5 minutes ago.
Hey, all guys. Right. It's Peter from Canada. I was just thinking what would be cool, like classic game in VR style. Doom obviously would be sweet. I think they already have something or like that, but I was thinking like Bubble Bobble, where like you're the guy throwing colors up into this cascading orb sequence thing, what's your guys' thoughts on classic games in VR?
So that's not Bubble Bobble, that's Puzzle Bobble.
I was gonna say like
Bust a Move.
Okay.
And it exists in VR. It's why I own an Oculus, a Meta Quest now. All right, Oculus by Meta.
It's the Facebook VR.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a lot of fun. It gives
you. You look up or you look forward?
I swear to God, I've talked about it because I was so impressed. When you play it and you hold your hands in front of yourself, you get these two big dino paws. And you get a wad of bubbles up there. And then you get like a bubble shooter and you pop the bubble in the top and then you pull it back like a slingshot and you fire it.
You actually slingshot them all yourself?
You pull it back and you fire it. And you fire it into the massive bubbles. And it actually plays really well.
It's like a tiring constantly doing that.
It does get a little tiring if you do it, for long enough. In addition to that, I don't know. There's a lot of things that would probably be neat. I'd love to see like Excitebike in VR. But keep it simple. Keep it simple. Circular tracks, but change just all the different. Basically, what I want to see is
circular track. It's not circular.
It's oval. Yeah, it is.
So, the 64, not the NES one.
Well, no, in NES they're supposed. They're supposed to mimic.
But you don't turn. Oval.
Yes, you don't.
You just change lane.
But I would like to essentially see the Mario Kart or the Excitebike level from Mario Kart 8 with a level creator.
Okay.
So basically, you get a blank oval, but just like Excitebike, you can put your own hills and stuff in there. I think that would be fun in VR.
How would you do the VR on that
Would you like changing lanes? Would you just like shift like that to change the lanes?
Yeah, I mean, or you could just play like a normal game with video game controls and change lanes that way. But
you like that idea for
first person. You could probably be like...
So obviously first person shooters make sense for VR.
Yes.
Because that's almost...
Oh yeah, that's too easy.
So is there an official Doom VR one?
There is a Doom VR, not for the original Doom, but for Doom 2016, and I have no idea if it plays well or not.
Oh, would you go out and get a Doom 2 one if they had that?
Oh, if there was Doom 2, yeah, I would absolutely. Yeah, sure.
That'd be great. All right, I'll do a couple more here.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. What's up? This is Josh again. Hey, Josh. My question is, if you guys could pick a video game mascot to be the mascot of the Amico, what would you pick? I would personally pick Conker from Conker's Bad Fur Day because, you know, he's a drunken mess, just like the Amico. Thanks, guys.
Well, they had a mascot that...
They did, and it was laughed at. L-A-F-F-E-D. It was laughed at so much that they never talked about it or brought it again.
It was... I think it was on the portal.
There's an animation
for... I think it was called Lodi. It was like a console... It was a robot that looked like the Amico. It had eyes, and it had like... The torso was the console, and the arms and legs were the Amico controllers.
Yeah.
And it was like...
Floating through space.
Yeah. And then I think Tommy tried to copyright strike anyone that posted it on like a video or whatever, and just like,
yeah,
because I guess that was the big deal. It was like, oh, we're gonna have a Lodi. I think that was the name. That's an awful name, by the way, for a mascot.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's real bad.
You want to remind someone that it's called Lodi because your console takes a minute to boot up. That's probably good to remind people of that. No, it was not a minute. It was 30 seconds. Okay, Tommy. Okay. All right. You can lie about whatever you want. You can't bend time and space because you think you can.
Right.
You can't do that. You want to do one more? Or you want to?
Yeah, let's do one more.
One more before we check in, or one more?
Let's just check in.
Okay. He's done.
So, Pat, you want to know how my video games live gig went, huh? Well, it was awesome, actually. I mean, I was getting a bunch of messages from people about refunds for the Amico and GameStop orders being canceled, and I said, sorry, that's Phil Adams' problem now. I got nothing to do with that. I'm too busy rocking everybody's world over here to care about your problems. But I heard Sam was there, you know, from Ars Technica. Get it? Because it's Ars Technica, but I'm saying it's ass. You know, it's a play on words. But he's on my shit list, and I think they mixed it up with my guest list. The Sam got in, and then Mike Kennedy said that he didn't. But if I knew Sam was there, I would have walked right off that stage and slapped him right in his face. Security wouldn't stop me. You know how much respect they have for world-class musicians? They just understand. We're passionate people. We get a bit slap-happy sometimes. Rick James was like that. We're all like that. Don't make a maniac out of me.
Well, you know what's funny about that? We never brought up ever in our covers. Thanks, Tommy, for checking in.
Yeah,
the fact that when asked about Mike Kennedy in interviews, Tommy would actually stick up and defend a little bit.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, he like, or like he meant well, or he had a plan. Almost like foreseeing that the same shit would happen to him, but 10 times fucking worse.
Yeah.
That's what it seemed like. You're almost like hedging your bets. Well, you know, Mike maybe didn't want it to be a scam, but it's almost like, Tommy, you knew you'd end up here. I think in your heart of hearts, you knew it would always end up at this point in time. It was inevitable.
I'm also tired of people who feel like they have to respect the idea. Ideas are a fucking dime a dozen.
Yes.
Bad ideas, even cheaper.
Sure.
I don't have to respect fucking anyone for having an idea that makes someone go, oh, that would be fun.
Yeah, and then taking everyone's money to accomplish
it. Yeah, I don't have to respect shit.
No, you don't do that. Well, this was fun, Ian.
That was fun.
We got back on schedule.
We did.
After our 20-minute delay of stalling drivers.
Mm-hmm.
It's all good. Did you have fun, Ian?
I did. I had a good time. Then go home, and Vonnie brought me some food back from TJ yesterday.
Oh, what type of food?
Chili relleno.
Ooh.
Big chili.
I had one of those in forever.
Stuffed with cheese. Yeah. So I'm going to go eat that.
I miss those empanadas from Christmas. Those were good.
Not empanadas.
Oh, they weren't empanadas. You're right.
Tamales.
Tamales, that's right. They weren't empanadas. I say that because I just ordered Indian. I order Indian about once every 2.5 months.
Did you get some samosas?
Yes, which are like not empanadas, but
you know, it's a handheld food.
It's in the. I love their lamb ones. The lamb some.
Oh God,
lamb is we don't eat enough little lambs, unfortunately. It's so tender and delectable, that meat. I hate to say it.
No, it is. It's delicious.
I don't know why they're so tasty. But the lamb samosa, and I dip it in the what the hell is the sweet brownish sauce that you do? They give you the green one, that's like
I don't know. They give you the brown syrupy sauce.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
You know what I mean, though?
Yeah, I do.
And you dip a samosa in that, and my God. Talk about sweet and savory, Ian. Talk about honey on chicken. That's basically almost the same thing because it's fried outside and you go in there. What is that dark sauce called? Now I'm actually curious. You know what I'm talking about, though, right?
I'm looking. It's probably just a chutney.
Chutney? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's probably just a chutney.
Then what's the green one called?
Don't know.
No, the green one's chutney. Oh, they're all chutneys.
They're all chutneys.
They're all chutneys. You usually get the green one, which is like, it's like a spearmint sort of taste, minty taste.
Usually I think it's like a mint and yogurt chutney, maybe.
I don't think it's yogurt, but it's mint. But then you get the brown one.
Yeah, you do get the brown one, and that's also a chutney.
And then the rajita is the yogurt one, and that's the best thing ever.
Yeah, I love that.
That's the best thing ever. I wish that we can go Monday nights, Ian. They used to have the one in Hillcrest, Bombay. They had the buffet, Indian buffet, every Monday, and it was good quality. And I used to go with Frank.
Yeah.
I used to go with Frank and get like tandoori chicken by the fucking pound and all the naan you can eat. Keep it coming.
I love naan.
And then one day Frank was like, oh, I don't like that food. I don't want to go anymore. I was like, Frank, we've been there like 9 times. What do you mean like going there? And it's like, we never went there again. We used to go there like once every couple months.
Weird.
Now I want Indian food again, damn it. All right. Thanks so much, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.